Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. Do you have more quotes down
well,
there?
Well, last week, I must remind you, you said you had something you wanted to
continue. Well, I'm going to try to, let me see if I can remember back where we were at. But do you have more quotes?
I do have another.
Okay,
all right. I have a Mozart quote.
But we'll get there. Let's see if I can remember what I wanted to say. It had to do with where we were headed, but it's one of these things that's almost beyond words, that stuff was getting generated in my awareness that I felt like was getting at something.
Well, what we were talking about.
Keep trying, then you can jump in if I really get lost and having trouble with it. Wait, say again. Where can you remember what
I remember what we said before you said
what I said.
You thought of something.
And now we're going to allow the audience to imagine what that might have been.
you were talking about the difference between how you perceived of yourself from the inside how then when you saw yourself on a videotape and how other people saw you, there was kind of a gap. And then I made a comment that possibly how we see ourselves from inside is more accurate because it includes all of the things that we are that are beyond the skin and the nose and the eyes and all of that. So
right. And I think I was talking about how I perceived myself differently when I was young. I had an inner idea of what I looked like, and I was getting used to over time of a lifetime what I actually look like and the way I sound and all of this stuff. But the other thing that's happened for me is that my identity has become much more with the self that's the same self inside of all of us. And then I think I made a remark after we stopped recording that I find this area of the shells that we identify with and the opinions and this sort of surface level of what we are being the vehicles that we move in the world with, and yet we are more and more beginning to recognize that the self inside of each of us is the same. And so how we, through art and you talked about the quote from Thomas More, where the core of religion being that empty core that we're getting at, and the same thing being the case in the art. These are larger vehicles that society uses to try to for us all to cognize together the oneness at the basis of our existence, or that self that's the same self inside all of us. And I just find that utterly compelling as our task as artists to make that happen. That's about all I really wanted to say. Because the shell part, the different, that which makes us seem like we're separate and distinct, and you were talking about seeing yourself in that film as a form, and it was a little bit hard for you to identify yourself as that form. But it's also difficult for me to identify, or for us to identify, the other selves around us in those shells as ourself. And yet, more and more, that's becoming the reality. But so there's this pulsing between being separate and being one. And more and more people are getting a handle on that, I think, as we move into what we might call the new age. But as artists, we are actively attempting to make that happen. And I think we talked in the show a couple of weeks ago in terms of the Thomas More core of the thing. I talked about, yes, that for me, art is totally about this. It's not about decorating rooms, although if you decorate a room nicely, if you put a piece of art over the couch that has a beautiful green nest, and everyone walks in and they say, "Wow, green nest." Then there's a communion around green nest. So you can't get away from, as artists and as people who are creating and creating together, looking at an experience and then a communion around that experience. You can't get away from that at all as artists. And that's why our profession is so great at whatever level it is.
And then, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go on.
Well, and then all it involves the integration of these two aspects of life as well, this wholeness and all the little expressions, because even if there are a number of artists who are all working from that deep, inner, empty, empty, full core, their expressions of that are going to be different. Just like even if we are able to perceive the sameness and the unity between us and somebody else, I'm still going to look different on the outside than you look on the outside. And which is a delightful thing. It's what makes music out of life instead of one same note, even at that deep level. The impulse is to create expressions of all sorts. And yet, I guess it's kind of a matter of transparency. Those expressions can be transparent to the degree that the fullness isn't lost to the viewer, and that's what's communicated to the viewer when he looks at that work of art, or it's just opaque and something came out of that and it just has created something solid and opaque, and you look at that and you don't see those levels inside.
I mean, the delight and the mystery is this dialogue, this dance between the two sides of the universe. Mm-hmm. That there's the whole one, the only thing that exists, the one intelligence, it's all that there is. And yet, in order to be what it is as a totality, there has to be the multiplicity mm-hmm. that dances right. out of it. And those two things just constantly are in dance, and this is what it's all about. So I think that if the one side, the manifest materials kind of side, or the multiplicity side, gets disconnected, then all there is separate, everything is separate. And so then it's not a nice thing when all the separate parts are going to war with each other. But when there's when it's never lost, the connection, then it's like the reason for existence becomes like right there. And then we're dancing. It's like you're finally able to dance with your beloved. Mm. And nothing's like, it's only even more amplified. That's where you fall in love, the uniqueness, and then you start falling in love with everything in front of you, because the uniqueness of you and the uniqueness of you and the uniqueness of you in the context of it being just my beloved and kind of cognizing that it's yourself and it's your perfect other side, and all of this together becomes like pretty fun.
Yeah, which is what happens in your studio. I mean, you've brought this up in other shows, that when you're painting in your studio from that level, you are interacting with your beloved, basically. You're all of the images that are coming through you and you're playing with in your studio, on your canvas or in your sculptures or whatever, your music or whatever, is nothing but that, just being in love with your beloved in whatever form that is taking.
Music. Weird time.
Yeah. Oh, well, and museum. Also, a museum from muse. It's the cathedral of the muses.
So what do you think about all this, mister?
Well, I think it's interesting that the word music begins with muse.
Well, thank you.
I'm exercising the stop after the first thought concept.
I think that we've the show is beginning to go to that place where there's nothing yet left to be said. But we have to keep talking, because much time have we got left?
Oh, we have 17 and a half minutes.
Okay.
Well, I could read this from Mozart.
We're barely getting started.
Right, move on.
Definitely Mozart.
This is actually
muse art.
Speaking of music.
This is actually a letter that Mozart wrote to somebody. And I'm going to just start reading it because it may be that I have to read the whole thing. It's not that long, but it's longer than the quotes I usually read on the air, but it may be totally worth it. Mozart said, "When I am, as it were, completely myself, entirely alone and of good cheer, say traveling in a carriage or walking after a good meal or during the night when I cannot sleep, it is on such occasions that my ideas flow best and most abundantly. Whence and how they come, I know not, nor can I force them. Those ideas that please me, I retain in memory, and am accustomed, as I have been told, to hum them to myself. If I continue in this way, it soon occurs to me how I may turn this or that morsel to account, so as to make a good dish of it, that is to say, agreeably to the rules of counterpoint, to the peculiarities of the various instruments, etc. All this fires my soul, and provided I am not disturbed, my subject enlarges itself, becomes methodized and defined, and the whole, though it be long, stands almost complete and finished in my mind, so that I can survey it like a fine picture or a beautiful statue at a glance. Nor do I hear in my imagination the parts successively, but I hear them, as it were, all at once. What a delight this is, I cannot tell. All this inventing, this producing, takes place in a pleasing, lively dream. Still, the actual hearing of the tout ensemble is, after all, the best. What has been thus produced, I do not easily forget, and this is perhaps the best gift I have my divine maker to thank for. When I proceed to write down my ideas, I take out of the bag of my memory, if I may use that phrase, what has been previously collected into it in the way I have mentioned. For this reason, the committing to paper is done quickly enough, for everything is, as I said before, already finished, and it rarely differs on paper from what it was in my imagination. At this occupation, I can therefore suffer myself to be disturbed, for whatever may be going on around me, I write and even talk, but only of fowls and geese, or of Gretel or Barbel or some such matters. But why my productions take from my hand that particular form and style that makes them Mozartish and different from the works of other composers is probably owing to the same cause which renders my nose so large or so aquiline, or in short, makes it Mozart's and different from those of other people, for I really do not study or aim at any originality." So that was a wonderful insight into Mozart.
Yeah, that was great. Extremely interesting.
But it isn't a lot different than the way Michelangelo described where he worked from.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's where all artists that get facility and cognition work from.
It's interesting that he even was moved to mention that he wasn't trying to be original, because I wouldn't have thought he would be trying to be original. He's just trying to produce something that he would like.
Well, this was a letter he wrote to somebody, yeah. So it may have been that people had been saying to him over and over,
your work is so original.
Yeah. Oh, you're so original, darling. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he got that, and I think all artists get that, and I think all artists would have the same reaction.
Yeah.
No, I'm just being myself. Mm-hmm. But, oh, but it's a complete breakthrough. It's so different. It's like that.
Well, and what I thought was interesting in reading that quote, because I found the quote, a few days ago, but in reading it at this point, this is exactly what we've just been talking about for the last couple of shows. And even to the point of he related it to his nose and how that part in, whatever's going on, coming through him, through his particular nervous system and his particular brain and all of that, has a certain uniqueness only because this huge thing coming from the universe is just somehow filtered through that little body. And so it takes that form by coincidence almost.
I love the description of how it came to him.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It was also interesting that he listed the circumstances where he's really himself. Mm-hmm. And It sounded like he considered all of them to be very positive situations, like after a good meal. And yet one of them was when I can't sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's interesting, to actually be perfectly happy about not being able to sleep at night. Oh, good, I'm awake in the middle of the night and I can't sleep. I'll write a symphony.
Well, yeah, he didn't go into describing that thing. But I know myself, although I sleep like a log, actually, for you,
that
there are
like a rock.
Times when I wake up in the morning or I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I will... There is no sleeping because the artistic vision is flowing, and I just have to go and start to get it down, and that's all there is to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for my experience, has for most of the years that I can remember in my life, my clearest and most expansive ideas or perceptions always come with the first thought of the morning. It's like as soon as, because I also sleep quite well and you know, solidly, I guess, in the night. But when that first impulse comes in the morning, it always takes me to some wonderful place. So I have to lie there for a while before getting up and letting that finish itself off. And then it often leads to a work of art or something I'm writing about or something that I'm going to do or a trip I'm going to take or whatever. Or clarification of some question that I'd had before, and the answer is kind of appearing.
No, I have the same experience. That's my most common experience, is that just as you wake up in the morning, the now my problem in recent years has been all this that I've taken on so that I don't get enough sleep. Mm-hmm. But when I get the right amount of sleep, then I'm prepared. I will almost always wake up and I'll have all these creative ideas. And then I'll sit there and let them like work themselves out. But then I'll jump up and write it all down before I forget.
Yeah, one wonders, like in the quote about Mozart, is if he had had a job in an accounting office or something and he had to be at the job at 8 o'clock in the morning, what would have happened to these full-fledged symphonies that came to him in the night? Would they have still remained so that when he got home from work he could write them down? Or was he blessed with a lifestyle where he could...
Yeah, and this brings up a very significant point that I think we've probably touched on in the past. Those societies that cherish this, just as many societies of primitive and traditional societies cherish the savants and the madmen and all of this as doorways to divinity and to creativity and to seership or what, that societies that are more the automatic, the societies to automate everything to work perfectly, and we have to, you know, everybody's got to be on time and get everything done and get all this system put together. Those kinds of societies are not the societies necessarily where wholeness emerges and great works of art emerge. It's usually societies where you see a balance between what we might say the left-hand side of the brain and the right-hand side of the brain, or the patron and the artist, where the patron, those who have power and wealth, cherish the gift that the artist brings so that they create situations mm-hmm. where a Mozart or a Michelangelo can be vehicles for this the emergence. I mean, think if no Mozart was ever presented to this our surface level of life, what a connection with the divine we would be missing. And Michelangelo, what if I think it was Lorenzo de Medici was the patriarch at that time, when at 19 or 17 or something, he took Michelangelo in and created the fertile ground for him to be able to deliver these gifts to society. Mm-hmm. If we had told him, you know, get a job, you know, we've got to build character in this young man instead of allowing the artist to flow in him because he'll just be a deadbeat artist. I mean, if if it had gone another way, we would be missing all that richness of life.
So bring back patronage.
Well, I think that the arts flourish when you have a marriage. The two sides recognize each other's value, just like the two sides of the brain, and that there's a marriage between patronage and the art, the creative artists.
Well, I it's suppose a divine relationship. Our version of that these days are grants.
Oh yeah, I mean we have our version in contemporary society. We fit it nicely into the business model of contemporary society, where we have galleries and they trade these works of arts as commodities, mm-hmm. and that kind of keeps the thing going in one way. Then there's the National Endowment of the Arts, which of course doesn't give any individual artist grants anymore, since this Congress was offended by what happened with some of that money. So we don't have the most encouraging society on earth, but without the National Endowment, without the Iowa Art Council grants, which I must mention on the air, we received one this month, and we're very grateful to the existence of the Iowa Art Council and their grant program. without those things, I don't know where we would be. It is our patronage of today. So the government and the society it does act as patrons. Corporations feel a duty. Wealthy people have always felt a duty to support the arts.
Well, and it can come from a distance too, like Matisse gained his greatest boon from a man in Russia who was just happened to fall in love with Matisse's work, and from his distant place and, you know, would send commissions to Matisse. And fortunately, he was open enough that when he gave Matisse a commission and say, this is the size I want and this is kind of the theme I want for this painting, he didn't mind if Matisse then took it off into a direction that was kind of different from what he had in mind. He always liked the result of it. But that collaboration, if that collaboration had not taken place, who knows how different the
course I think we're bringing up
Matisse's
a very important point
be,
about,
know?
The emergence of artworks, that it takes not only the artist, but some conduit that's mm-hmm. created by a patron. And it's, I mean, it's going on today. I mean, mm-hmm. without those elements, without the dealer even, mm-hmm. The dealer and the art museums create the galleries and the art museums create vehicles for the artists' impulses and their creations to exist, move into society.
And also, see, people, you know, we have art critics that kind of bring people's attention to certain artists, but there are also people, I'm sure even still today, like Gertrude Stein and her brother, who discovered Picasso and Matisse and all the group of artists in Paris early on when they were hardly selling anything and when their works were, you know, 35 francs or something like to buy, and filled up their salon with these works of art
divine,
and had people over.
It's a divine karmic event. Yeah. Because what would have happened without Leo Stein holding forth every week, elucidating and giving some reason for Picasso's work, mm-hmm. and creating a psychological milieu that attracted the titled people and the people with power to come down to Bohemia and get involved and make this thing happen, and it did. I mean, the whole history of art may have been different without that component.
Yeah, and it was such a simple thing, you know, Saturday night dinner and hang out around these paintings.
And it wasn't a forced thing. It wasn't somebody thought up the idea of this. It was totally spontaneous. Mm.
Which is probably part of the play of the muses. The muses probably don't just play in the studio, but in this whole network of artists and viewers and networkers, you know, the whole way that art expresses itself, not just onto the canvas, but then into society and you know, into different groups of people and so forth. I'm sure that people who are responsive to those impulses of the muses, like Gertrude Stein and her brother were, play just as, you know, have just as much of a close connection to the muses as the artists themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's the desire of life itself to penetrate and emerge, and it just finds every crack and hole to do this.
How does one amuse a muse?
They are funny. I don't think they need amusing because they're...
I think they find us amusing.
Oh, right. Oh, yes, who, like the Puck's line, what fools these mortals be.
Yes.
All right, how many minutes left?
Well, we're counting down the minutes here on Icon Art Radio. We're about to hit the 1 minute left mark. When we do, I'll ring a bell. Bing!
Well, I think it's fascinating that we started out the last three shows by talking about art having this empty center at its core, and that giving rise to all of these expressions. And during each of these shows, we've actually hit a spot where we just all became silent. So it's probably because this has been the topic. We're not doing sequential shows.
It's interesting that also if this were video, we could all just fall silent and sit here smiling, gazing happily at the paintings on our respective field of view, and let the audience just watch us sitting in silence. But silence on the radio means you've lost the station. Something's gone wrong.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.